From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 5th day of October 2016. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Chip Nellinger from Blue Reef Agri-Marketing. He's out of Morton, Illinois. A bit later in the program, we'll check in with the folks at the Anderson's Climbers facility. That's the ethanol plant outside of Logansport, Indiana. As we close out our half hour together, we'll discuss the weather forecast with Drew Lerner, World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. And along the way, I'll bring you the agricultural news for the afternoon. USDA last night released the ARC and PLC payments. You can check out our website, willag.org, to see maps and get an idea of what the payments in your county might look like. Also, we'll take a look today at the Farm Bill and whether it will be opened early for negotiations, maybe as soon as next year. And that all happens on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Either way, the numbers finished up in Chicago on this Wednesday afternoon. December corn a half lower at 347. The March at 357 and a half, 0.75 cents lower. December of next year down a half at 386 and a half. November beans down 6 3/4 at 956 3/4. January at 963 1/2, 5 3/4 lower. Next year's July 5 3/4 lower at 981 3/4. Bean oil down 23 cents. Bean meal 70 cents lower. Soft red winter wheat up 9 1/2 cents in the December at 405. July, the harvest month at $4.50 3/4, 9 3/4 higher. The hard red at 452 3/4, up 12 cents. Live cattle futures in the October, 95 cents higher at $102.85. October feeders at 127.65, down 35 cents. And lean hogs for the day at $48.60, 2 1/2 cents lower. December contract down $1.52 1/2 at $41.97 1/2. We're now joined by Chip Nellinger. He's at Blue Reef Agri-Marketing out of Morton, Illinois. Good afternoon to you, Chip.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Well, let's start with the wheat because it had the green on the calendar for the afternoon. And at least wheat futures began to rebound. We've had a lot of wheat supplies, not only in the U.S., but around the planet. Is this finally an end to the lower prices for wheat? And can they rebound more strongly? Or does it have to do with some outside influences?
Well, I think we may be getting close to the end here, and it's been a long time since we could say, boy, look at the wheat market winning the day today. I think there's a few things going. Number one, spring wheat, Minneapolis wheat, has definitely put a bottom in. You've turned some of the moving averages higher a couple days back here, closed above the 50-day moving average. So you've got some technical buying coming into the spring wheat market. And I think that's helped the Chicago and Kansas City markets. The big supply story is kind of old news at this point. And I think the assumption is we're going to pair some acreage back here this fall on some fall seeded, winter wheat. And so the funds have a huge, basically short, record short position built up in the wheat. And this may be enough to kind of start a spark to get them to want to cover some of those shorts into the end of the year. And so, you know, hopeful, fingers crossed here, that we finally, maybe today, starting to turn the corner in the wheat market. And again, I think there's some other forces at work, too. I think you're seeing a lot of spread unwinding, too, that's kind of given a little buying interest in the corn market and the wheat market, and a little bit of selling pressure in the beans. So, you know, this last quarter we just started it, and I think that you could see some fund money flow movement that, you know, maybe is going to have the funds coming out of some of their short corn and wheat positions. So mm-hmm. our fingers are crossed here.
Would this be good news for the corn market if wheat were to begin to try to build a base and move higher?
Absolutely. Really, corn is acting pretty well technically in its own right. And if they're going to finally take some pressure off of the wheat market, I do think that'll help help the corn market as well. So, you know, maybe some lights at the end of the tunnel here that we could maybe see a nice little bounce that maybe we're in the middle of here.
USDA on Sunday, actually on Monday, reporting that farmers in Illinois, at least as of Sunday, were about halfway done. You're there in the Peoria area. How is harvest going?
Yeah, I'd say maybe just a touch under half done. There's a lot of beans ready, and you know that rain we had. I guess it was Friday afternoon and a little bit follow through rain Saturday morning, and then we had about 3 days where it was just kind of cloudy and humid out. So it hasn't been real great bean cutting weather. I think farmers, we can get a few sunny days here strung together in a row, we're going to really kind of move over and hit bean harvest pretty hard. So I'd say we're close to that, maybe just a shy of 50% in the corn. A lot of beans to go, and I think that's going to be the focus if we can get some sunny weather here over the next 10 days.
Next week, the United States Department of Agriculture, a week from today, in fact, at 11 a.m. Central Time, will release the next crop production report. Have we got enough of the crop in to know whether the corn crop will continue to grow in size, or does what you hear from farmers indicate that maybe this crop isn't quite so big?
Yeah, I think in the big picture, I'm questioning whether maybe they've got some cutting to do, not dramatically. You know, that being said, you know, if you cut across the state of Illinois, roughly Interstate 74, everything north of there it is good. It's like best ever. It's the best of the best in the whole country this year. But that's the minority of the Corn Belt, and a lot of other producers outside of that area kind of coming in with reports that, yeah, especially the later planted stuff starting to kind of fall back a little bit, and that many of them are going to end up 10 to 20 plus bushels below their previous record yield in 2014. So I don't think it's a 160 crop. I think it could be closer to 170. We'll have to see if next Wednesday they kind of stay on that trend of slowly cutting corn yields. I think that's kind of the assumption of the market right now. So, you know, unchanged on yields from this level may be a little bit disappointing to the corn market.
And of course, just as a reminder, USDA dropped the corn yield down 0.7 of a bushel in September from the August, but they started at 175.1, now at 174.4. 170, 172 would still be a long drop from where we are at the moment, but we'll see how that pans out. On the flip side, they raised in the month of September the soybean crop size, at least on yield and production both, up 1.7 bushels to the acre at 50.6. Can they go to 52?
52 might be stretching it, but you know, the reports out of the field are phenomenally good. So again, I think the trend continues. I don't know that they drop corn yields all the way to 170 in October. I think they end up there. So I think the trend is small cuts in corn and small bumps higher in beans. And, you know, actual yield reports are just phenomenal. I mean, you hear a large amount of 70 to mid-70 bushel bean final average field yields, some in the 80s. I've heard a couple firsthand ones in the 90s. So bean yields are phenomenal, and that's pretty general. That's not just Illinois. I mean, producers from across the Midwest are reporting excellent bean yields. So my brain tells me they could probably have room to bump it. 52 might be a stretch, but, you know, if we see that, I don't think that happens until January.
It's been a tough year for hog farmers, and we've finally gotten to that point where we're down where we've not been for, I think, at least 10, maybe 13 years in this marketplace. What do you see there?
Unfortunately, the hog side just beating it up here, another $2 lower today. I guess the only bright spot is we do have cheaper meal prices. We do have cheaper corn prices than we've had in several years as well. So, you know, the cost of gain has come down, but that still isn't keeping, you know, the red ink from flowing. So, unfortunately, I think that there may be some more pressure here. And again, it's, you know, a result of those high prices we had a couple years ago. The industry has expanded rapidly over the last 3 or 4 years, and unfortunately, we're seeing the effects of that increase in supply with lower prices, and there's nothing in today's action, unfortunately, that tells you that, you know, we've got any signs of a bottom yet. Hopefully it's soon, but you can't say that with today's close.
All right. Hey, thanks so much, Chip. We do appreciate you being with us today.
All right. Thanks a lot, Todd.
That's Chip Nellinger with Blue Reef Agri-Marketing from Morton, Illinois. In today's agricultural news, China's trade record is going under the microscope today as the Office of the U.S. Trade Representative prepares its annual report to Congress on how well China is honoring commitments made when it joined the WTO, the World Trade Organization, back in 2001. At the USTR-led hearing, the first witness, Aaron Ennis, Vice President of the U.S.-China Business Council, plans to tell the interagency panel that the situation for U.S. companies is mixed over the 15 years after Beijing entrance into the WTO. On balance, China's WTO entry has been positive, Ennis says in prepared remarks. China's economy is more open now than it was in 2000, even if too many market access barriers remain. The United States benefits from having a rules-based system through which China can be held accountable when it falls short of its commitments. At the same time, they go on, there are numerous policies implemented by China after WTO ascension that appear to be done purely for the purpose of protecting and promoting domestic industries at the expense of foreign companies, which, of course, calls into question China's commitment to the WTO's national treatment principles. The mixed review mirrors the 2015 report from the USTR on China's WTO compliance. Let's stay on the international front now. The European Union has resumed investigations into the Dow-DuPont merger after the company submitted missing information requested by the EU Antitrust Authority. Dow Jones reports the European Commission has set a new date of February 6, 2017, to complete the investigation into the merger. However, those familiar with the investigation warned the deadline could still be extended. Dow and DuPont had previously planned to close the deal before the end of this year. The European Commission halted the investigation because of the missing information last month, just a month after the EU opened a review of the merger. The European Commission is examining the potential merger on concerns the combination may reduce competition in crop protection, seeds, and certain petrochemicals. Well, let's move a little closer to home on the national front. The Department of Agriculture yesterday late announced payments to farmers enrolled in the safety net programs due to market downturns during the 2015 crop year. USDA says many of the 1.7 million farms enrolled in either the agricultural risk coverage or price loss coverage program, those are ARC and PLC, will receive payments. USDA will issue more than $7 billion in payments. Ag Secretary Tom Vilsack says the payments will provide reassurance to farmers who are standing strong against low commodity prices. Unlike the old direct payment program, which issued payments during both weak and strong market conditions, the 2014 Farm Bill authorized the ARC PLC safety net to trigger and provide financial assistance only when decreases in revenues or crop prices, respectively, occur. We'll hear more about the Farm Bill in just a bit. And finally today, we'll come back home, where net income for the nation's agricultural cooperatives increased some 14% last year, according to the U.S. Department of Agriculture. The annual report on cooperative business sales by USDA shows farmer, rancher, and fishery cooperatives posted a record net income of $7 billion in 2015. Again, Agriculture Secretary Tom Vilsack says the report shows the cooperative business model continues to perform strongly. The report lists the top 100 performing co-ops in the nation. And again, this year's list shows that Iowa is home to more top 100 co-ops than any other state. Iowa is followed by Minnesota with 11 and Nebraska with 9. California and Illinois each have 6, while Wisconsin has 5. USDA indicated that total business volume fell for the top 100 cooperatives from $177 billion in 2014 to $149 billion last year. However, net income rose from $4.3 billion to $4.9 billion, or an increase of 14%. One other note on that story before we close out our agricultural news. Minnesota-based CHS Incorporated remains the nation's largest cooperative with $34.7 billion in total business volume for last year. Dairy Farmers of America came in second with $13.9 billion. And finally, Minnesota's Land O'Lakes was third at $13.1 billion in sales. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Do find us online at willag.org, W-I-L-L-A-G.org. Now let's talk a bit about the Farm Bill. A long-term agriculture senator says huge crop surpluses and low prices have boosted the odds of a year-early rewrite of the 2014 Farm Bill. Agriculture leaders and producers have argued for an early Farm Bill for weeks, pointing to the flaws in the existing farm safety net. Longtime GOP agriculture senator from Iowa, Chuck Grassley, agrees that there is need and urgency.
When we get back to Washington, we're going to be hearing a lot of stress from farmers that are having trouble getting a refinance for the new crop year. And I think you're going to have, instead of dealing with a 2019 Farm Bill, I think there's going to be a lot of talk about we got to get a new Farm Bill passed in 2017, preempt the 2018 fifth year of the 2014 Farm Bill, and get a new Farm Bill started a year early.
Here's what the Iowa senator has to say about dealing with the Farm Bill in 2017.
We won't have time to make much difference for next year, except to make sure that the farm loan programs have plenty of money available for farmers that can't finance through normal financing, or bankers that are demanding a loan guarantee.
Grassley says there is not enough time to get a farm bill done before farmers plant a crop next year, meaning any new bill would apply to 2018, but help cannot come soon enough for agriculture. Net farm income is down some $30 billion or more since 2013 as prices fall well below the cost of production. Grassley predicts lawmakers will be deeply into discussing the next farm bill within the next 6 or 7 months. We're joined now to take a look at the cash grain market by Patrick Kaufman. He's at the Anderson's Climbers facility. That's out of sight of Logansport, Indiana. They produce ethanol. Good afternoon to you, Patrick. I bet you're busy today.
We are, Todd. It was the weather's kind of straightened up a little bit. It was a dry morning, earlier start than usual. We've had a few days here in a row that have been overcast and foggy in the morning, and this one was breezy overnight and dry. And so we got shelling corn earlier this morning than normal, and now guys are switching to beans this afternoon.
And tell me about each of those crops in your area.
Again, the expectations on corn were pretty grand, and so I think the net yield has been a little disappointing. Our bean yields, but yet still a very good corn crop, very good corn crop. Our bean yields have been above average, and folks are very happy with them.
Have you been surprised that the futures market has held as strong as it has in the face of both of these crops?
I think fundamentally, yes. We've got an uptick in demand and export, which is good. I think the end user of corn, the ethanol industry as a whole, might be siding on the profitable side. So demand is strong. Demand is good, I think. And with yields being slightly lower, you know, we could finish out closer to a 2 billion bushel corn crop, 2-1 to a 2-0. And, you know, the last couple of years we've survived at a 1-8 and we've traded at 370, 380. I don't think it fundamentally we need to be there right now, but we will see as demand continues. Strong focus on South America, whether in regards to beans. I think we're sitting in a better position than we were a year ago.
Hey, thanks, Patrick. Patrick Kaufman is with the Anderson's Climbers facility outside of Logansport, Indiana. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. I'm Todd Gleason. Let's turn our attention to the weather forecast. Drew Lerner is here from World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Let's start with the Midwest and the Corn Belt. What does harvest progress look like in the next several days, please?
Well, we have a couple of frontal systems that are going to impact the region. It will produce a little bit of rain, but it's not going to be the kind of rain we've had in past weeks where we've had big soakings that have lasted forever and ever. These will be a couple of quick-moving systems. It looks like this first little system is actually falling apart here today for the eastern Midwest. We'll see some showers occurring tonight and tomorrow. Some new development, though, will occur out across the western Corn Belt as we go into the day tomorrow, and that will set the stage for rain tomorrow into Friday. For the western Corn Belt and to a lesser degree in the Ohio River Basin area, we're actually going to see a good 10 days, maybe 2 weeks of dry weather from the Ohio River Valley area southward through the Delta and into the interior parts of the southeastern U.S., so really good conditions there. Once we're done with this frontal boundary in the Midwest, I don't think there's going to be another decent-sized rain event for at least a week after that. A couple of wimpy little showers, but that's going to be about it.
And then if you could take a quick look at Hurricane Matthew, seems to be acting a bit erratically.
Yeah, the forecast has been pretty consistent in the last week or so about it coming close to Florida and then going up towards the Carolinas. Well, in the last 24 hours, we've seen a lot of very strange forecasts coming out of the models. At midday today, the storm was suggested to move up, actually move over land in northeastern Florida at some point on Friday. It then kind of turns back out along the coast of South Carolina and then makes a big loop back towards Florida again. And the crazy model that we got at midday today even took it out into the Gulf of Mexico. I don't know. There seems to be some kind of magic going on here. I'm not quite sure what it's all about. But the bottom line is that there is no good long-range forecast for Matthew. I think we can expect it to move up the coast of Florida on Friday. There will be a lot of wind and rain there. We think the crops are going to be okay in Florida, but we do want to keep a close eye on it. And what happens to it after Friday is really up for a lot of debate. I do think the Carolinas will get some rain from it, but it'll be something worth watching very closely.
Let's go further south and look into the competition in Argentina and Brazil.
Yeah, last night we got a good rain to occur across parts of Argentina. They've been kind of limping along for a while here with not very good rains in the west and north part of the country. Some of the wheat country has been really dry and stressed for those crops because of it. And the rain that occurred last night, it probably ranged from 0.3 inch to about 1 1/3 inch and across most of the production area. A couple of spots did a little bit better. And we've got a couple of other rain events coming up over the next 10 days. So Argentina, from a wheat perspective, is going to see improvement. We will see some better planting conditions for corn and sunseed as well. So I think Argentina for a while here is going to move in the right direction. Brazil, I think everything looks really good there. The rains are going to be mostly in the north, up in center west and center south Brazil for this next week. And then in the following week, we'll see the rains more focused on southern Brazil. There's going to be some chatter out there in the marketplace about southern Brazil not getting much rain in this first week, but I don't think we have to worry about it. I do think rains will be back there in the not-so-distant future.
Thank you so much, Drew.
Have a good day.
You too. Drew Lerner is with World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Joins us on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. I'm Todd Gleason.